Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. My guest for this episode is Paul Garrett, a retired teacher who spent the last 20 years working as an environmental educator, beginning first in his elementary school classes and then within the community. In addition to continuing to teach in various ways, he also coordinates a high school environmental club, an adult environmental club, and coordinates connecting local green groups and businesses. I've known Paul for several years, and we've been playing tag since I started the show about sitting down to do an interview. But as seems too often to happen, as an adult with a busy schedule, we never quite aligned on getting together. Thankfully, we finally did, because I really like Paul. Beyond his incredibly generous personality and deep passion for what he does, he's taking action to help people build a better world. When speakers come to his environmental club meetings, they're focused on sharing information that people can use to make a change. He's done so much in these areas of outreach and education that he was recently awarded the Harrisburg Volunteer Citizen of the Year Award. I find that Paul's work is another model, or pattern if you will, for others to replicate in their own community. Whether or not you are actively practicing permaculture or just want to use the skills you currently have to make a difference, there are always places to apply your knowledge and fill a niche. One that stands out from this interview is for teachers and other educators and how they can get more environmental education, including permaculture, into schools, whether directly as a class or indirectly through after-school programs or environmental clubs. The more options that I explore, the more that abound. As I think I've made note of before, this was my first interview recorded in person with a guest. I took my recording rig over to Paul's house and we sat down for a chat. And I couldn't have done that without the support of the listening community. Your one-time or small recurring micro-donations allow me to invest in the tools and equipment necessary to continue to improve this show. And, from time to time, I can pick up something special from the farmer's market to give back to my family for their sacrifice of time for supporting me while growing this. I really appreciate all your help. You can find out more by going to thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. Now then, on to the interview with Paul Garrett. I'll join you afterwards with some thoughts and updates. All right then, Paul, if you are ready, could you give us a little bit about your background and biography, how you came to be an environmental educator, and your work with the Mechanicsburg Area Environmental Club?
Sure. That's an awful lot, but a lot of years covered. I taught fifth grade in Mechanicsburg at Northside Elementary School for 26 years, and as well as other teaching assignments in Mechanicsburg. I retired from Mechanicsburg in 1999. I would say that my environmental educatorship came about. I was born and raised for some time along the Condiguinic Creek, East Pennsboro Township, down behind the golf course. And so I know I was smitten with nature. The Condiguinic Creek at that time was very healthy and very full of life. And my family and all of my family's friends, father and mother, took advantage of that beauty and the sports that could be involved in out there. So that was the beginning. And I've carried the love of nature through my life. I also have a bit of Christianity that is deeply involved in my love for nature. I'm absolutely amazed at the beauty, but also the way that it all works and how it works together, and it works for a long, long time. So there's always that part of me. I think that my environmental education began when my principal, Marlon Lippert, at Northside School, he knew me inside and out, and he said to me one day, I want you to go out and develop a garden out in front of Northside School, and he would take care of the logistics, the rest of that. So my fifth grade class, this is 1992, did all of the research and figured out the locations and put in a garden at the school. Shortly after that, we received the National Gardening Club Award, and that was positive reinforcement for me. We were composting all the food scraps from the cafeterias, and we were including them in our garden, and our garden just did extremely well. We won a bunch of wheelbarrows and tools and seeds and those kind of things. So anyway, I was off and running at that point. And that was 1992. Then in 1999, I retired from Mechanicsburg School District and did my thing. I had 2 3-by-5 cards filled with things that I wanted to do when I retired. And I really don't recommend anybody ever doing that, because then you're like the horse running for the barn before retirement. But anyway, I had the list. I didn't know any better. And I got all of those things accomplished. And then one of my former third grade students became my boss. She invited me to start working with the environmental lessons and environmental site and everything at Mechanicsburg. So anyway, she hired me. Since 1992, I had been doing an organization that we called Green Team, and that was fifth grade, sort of rite of passage within the elementary schools. And that was pretty much gardening in the beginning, but then we reached out into stewardship, cleaning the north side of Mechanicsburg, all the alleys and streets, and it just kept branching out. Then in 99, when I retired, I went to Yellowstone National Park. One of the many things I did, work, I got a job at Yellowstone National Park and went out there and worked. And of course, that was incredible, incredible experience. I really recommend that for anybody. It's just like being there when the earth was being formed. You know, it's a great place. So anyway, I did that and did lot of other things at the time that were, most of them were leaning green. And I took the Green Team and we expanded that to all the schools and put in organic gardens. And then all the elementary schools that had a fifth grade by that time then had a Green Team that I was in, working with the kids. We had probably 40 to start off with. And right this last year, we had 107 fifth grade kids all doing organic gardening, all doing the stewardship things that we had done in the beginning. But we expanded it to include all of the environmental issues and have speakers that come in that really know stuff and teach the kids throughout the year. And then the kids in the spring take the seeds from last year's vegetables and plant them, raise them, and then repot them, and to finally put them out into the gardens. At that point, I started an adult environmental club, which is called Mechanicsburg Area Environmental Club. And that adult environmental club and the Green Team also had started a high school environmental club, and that one's called the Dirt Loving Tree Huggers. And that was very successful, very interesting, because in the beginning, I taught English as a second language at the high school. And in the beginning, all but two of the kids that were in the club were from different countries. And the interesting thing about that is that they were so grateful to live in the United States of America that they were already into doing good things for the country and paying back. They were in that mindset. And so I had all of these English as a second language, you know, from Bosnia and from Vietnam, many, many parts of the world. So that started in 1998, Dirt Loving Tree Huggers. Then, like I said, I got hired by my third grade student, former third grade student, and we began being a unified club, and one group would help the other group in different ways. The adult environmental club right now has about 20 members. And I can usually guess that depending on the topic of our meetings, which the meetings are always the second Monday of the month, the Adult Environmental Club comes together and learns something about environmental issues or does something worthwhile. We clean the Condiguinic Creek. I began that somewhere around, 1998 with the High School Environmental Club. And then we joined forces with the Condiguinic Creek Watershed Association. And May through September, as weather and creek conditions allow, we clean just about 3/4 mile of creek every month on the third Saturday of the month.
And I've gotten to see a lot of the work that you've done through the pictures that you share of the group doing the creek cleanup. And I'm always amazed at just the amount of material that you're getting out of the creek each time you clean. Tires and bags of trash, bundles of wire, all kinds of things that you found in there over the years. When you're doing that cleanup, is that the same section of creek each time, or do you keep moving and finding new stuff?
We keep moving. We start. We've never started down entirely at the mouth of the Condiguinic Creek, but we've started this last time with this loop through at the East Pennsboro Camp Hill border. And then we work our way upstream, just like I said, 3/4 mile on a Saturday morning. It's always a different section. We work our way up. Last time we worked our way up to Rich Valley Road, which is right behind Cumberland Valley High School. And it was at that point in two consecutive months, that we pulled out 122 tires from the creek. And because every time we go under a bridge cleaning, we figure that we're going to have 12 to 14 tires to pick up right under the bridge or slightly downstream, depending on when they were dropped in. Every time we clean up, we get, like you said, Scott, a lot of material. I have a 4x8 trailer with side rails on it, and most of the time we fill that trailer 1.5 to 2 times. So there's, I saw the tonnage estimated by the Condiguinic Creek Watershed Association. It was phenomenal over the years how much we have pulled out of that creek. Just really mindless things. I would like to tell you this one. We had the high school dirt loving tree huggers out. This was in the spring of last year or the year before. And we're coming up the Condiguinic. There is a flotation of straw and horse manure and horse bedding that comes down, goes from one bank to the other. It lasted going through our legs and around us for probably a minute, and then it stopped, and maybe we had a 5 or 6 minute break, maybe a 10 minute break, and then a whole another flotation of the same material coming down the creek. And we were just astounded, and we kept going up the creek, and the kids saw where the material was being dumped into the creek. There were these two men with a four-wheeler, and they would go up and get the bedding from the horse stables, bring it down, throw it in the creek. But the other thing, that the real reason I wanted to tell you, was these two men had a cabin along the creek. And the fall before we did the cleanup, they had a party there, and one of the people that they had invited burned down the cabin with their cigarette. And they had taken, this is partly what you were saying, Scott, they took everything from the cabin that they had to throw out, like all of the wiring, all of the kitchen sink and the spigots and the toilet and everything, and they threw them in the creek, because to them at that point they were away. They threw them away. And so we were following this trail. It included nails and screws and this ball of wire that you were alluding to. was as tall as I am. And anyway, I still have the feelings that when we saw all those things in the creek, and then we came up and I started a conversation with the two men, and we found, you know, we tried to get as much information on a friendly basis as we could from them. And so we found out what had happened. And then when we left, we reported it to DEP, who did nothing about it, said that they were not able to do anything because they hadn't been there at that time to see it. And I said, well, here we have pictures that show the material in the creek, show the kids walking up. I wanted to teach the kids point source pollution. And so I really wanted them to find out that there are consequences for breaking laws and point source pollution. So anyway, we reported it. DEP said they couldn't do anything about it because they were not there to have witnessed the whole thing. So it ended up, instead of being a really good lesson, it ended up being a really good lesson, because the kids saw that if you don't enforce the laws that you make, people just continue to take advantage of the situation. It was a very sad time for us all.
From that story, it's one of the things that I like about the work that you're doing in this area is that it's a lot of hands-on activity, getting people involved, getting them informed, letting them see, as you say, the consequences of actions, but also the positive impact that they can have by taking action, things that you're doing, like with the creek cleanup. And I'm wondering, you mentioned earlier that your faith has a role in that. Do you feel that your faith imparts on you a sense of stewardship for the earth? Or is there another point from your faith that gives you this sense of care and concern and giving back?
Well, love. Love for everything, I think I can say, even ugly things. I would say that the other component, which is not necessarily part of my faith, but it is a part of me, and that is my embarrassment for how ignorant people can be in thinking that they can abuse this world and just have it go on forever, not thinking about their children or their children's children or anything, not taking the time from their very busy lives, I'm sure, to educate themselves in what's the right thing to do to make the planet, or at least our part of the planet, sustainable. And so they just very, it seems to me, a lot of times in their hurried state, just abuse the planet. And it makes me cry. It makes me really feel sad that people just don't get it. That's the other part, I think.
Just that lack of concern that people have, that it's right now, this is my moment, life is what it is, I'll take what I need, and I can throw it away. Or, as you said with that cabin, that it was away, and that it can go somewhere else, that it can go away, and it's not a part of their life. But then, because we're, at this moment, at least only on this earth, there really is no away, because it becomes someone else's problem to deal with somewhere.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
There's a sign at Wildwood Park as you're walking through one of the raised pathways through there, and it says that we all live downstream. And I think about that not just from the watersheds themselves being downstream, but as we add things to the air and those migrate to the different communities, that thought that because of nuclear weapon testing that there's radiation everywhere as a result of that, that changes the way that scientists have to interact with the world and the impacts that those have. Or all the things that have been washing up the United States from Fukushima. It's amazing as one person to think of how big the world is in relation to ourselves, but then you look at just this tiny speck from space, and that this is the place that we have as our home. Another point that you raised was that you were doing school gardens in 1992, and they're kind of a big thing right now, that idea of raising food in a schoolyard and using the garden as a classroom. When you were doing that over 20 years ago, was that a relatively new idea at the time, or were there some other models that you were able to work off of?
I never found any other models to work from, but then I didn't look very hard either. I just did what was right for the kids and for me and for the garden. And with, at that time, what I knew about gardening. And as my life went on, I became a master gardener, and I learned a lot more that I could apply there. There was no model. It was more common sense and trial and error and those kind of things that were my model.
So you were doing a lot of experimentation, not only with your own work, but also then with the children to let them explore and try in the garden with you?
Oh, yeah.
What kind of an impact did that have on your children? Now, you mentioned that one of your third grade students then became your boss many years later and hired you back in to do a lot of this education and outreach work. Do you still have contact with some of your students from those days who tell you about what your role as an educator had on them?
Well, there's a young gentleman that's living upstairs in this house right now that, well, he just came back from Korea with a Korean wife and son, and he was one of my students, and we never lost contact, but he talks about the green team and the gardens and everything. Yeah, I love it being at Northside School and working in the garden because people drive by that know what's going on in the garden and know the green team, and I always get a couple beeps.
You have that community recognition of just not only yourself, but also the work that you're doing and what's occurring in the community. When it comes to your principal reaching out to you to start the garden and do that work, did you have a lot of support from the principal to get things happening, or were you kind of just given a project and let go on your own to make it happen?
Yeah. He knew that if he pointed me in the right direction in many senses and gave me freedom, that's all he needed to do. So he cleared the way with the school board, and then the kids and I did the rest. He was a great man.
Your principal kind of gave you a direction to go in, and then, as you say, cleared the way with the school board. Was the school board open at the time for doing this kind of work, or was that a hurdle that he had to overcome?
You know, Scott, I don't know the answer to that because I had absolutely no involvement. He took the ball and ran with it all the way. So I was never at a school board meeting at that time to argue the case. Like I said, I have worked for Mechanicsburg Area School District since 1973, and I can honestly say that I have never had any opposition to what I wanted to do. I had never had a negative, you won't even believe this, but I have never had a negative experience with anybody in the school district. So when my principal gave me the green light, I feel like the district gave me a green light too, to just pursue my passion.
It sounds then that whatever happened behind the scenes, your principal served very fully in his role as a principal and a manager to be the go-between between you as the person who was implementing this project for the students, and then any other obstacles that may have been there, that he managed that so that nothing came to you and allowed you to work openly and just pursue that. And that's really nice to hear. I know that some of the meetings that we've been to and some of the conversations we've had about the struggles in this area, about bringing different organizations together and the way that hierarchies break down and organizations, but to hear that you were in a public environment. So then, I don't remember quite where I was. We had a little interruption there that I'll edit out that people won't hear, but they'll hear this little bit from me. With these different community organizations and some of those hurdles that occurred, have you had a lot of support for your various projects from the community outside of, if you will, the green and environmental organizations?
The borough of Mechanicsburg is especially green and green, thinking always about the future, and I really respect that and like that. I also find the people of Mechanicsburg as being down to earth and open, transparent. And the borough of Mechanicsburg has opened the gates for me to go through. They do such things as they have contests where they have the Green Team drawing posters that they'll put on their internet that the kids drew about recycling cans and bottles or organic gardening or composting or anything like that. They reach out to the Green Team, and then they advertise it and put it at, what's the big Mechanicsburg Jubilee Day? Okay. So they are very supportive, the whole borough. And parents are very appreciative. I get a lot of thank yous and, you know, look at what my son's doing now kind of thing. As far as the organizations, scouting, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, those kind of things, that goes through my boss. And so I don't really have them reaching out to me saying, yeah, I'll come out and weed at the Trails and Trees Environmental Center. So I get lots of support, and sometimes it's enough, and sometimes I wish that there was more.
When it comes to support through your boss and the borough and the school district, does that also include financial support through grant money, or is your role in the school district as a volunteer? I ask that because one of the things that I'm interested in is the work that you're doing, I think, serves as a good model for other teachers or community members who might want to take this back and work on creating an organization like this that's small scale, local, that it's not necessarily citywide or countywide, that it could be within just a single school district or a municipality, or maybe even just within a single school or a community organization. So I'm wondering, what ways are you supported by the school district and your local municipality?
Well, as far as being supported by the school district, just like every other school district now, they have some foundation, they have some fund. Ours is called the Wildcat Foundation. And we apply for grants for our different projects. You know, we have a composting teaching facility where we have 15 different kinds of composters that we are using to see which are the best working with the kids. Anyway, they support that, and they put the money into those kind of projects. We have a teaching garden out of Trails and Trees, and they put the money into that kind of thing. What I would really recommend that people that are interested in doing this, and by the way, the Green Team is an after-school program. When I was teaching fifth grade, it was an in-class as well. But now that I retired, it's an after-school program. And the best, smartest thing that I found is to go through your Parks and Recreation. And that Parks and Recreation is different in every school district. But anyway, ours is very closely tied with the school district, but also local municipalities. So they get the word out. They take, you know, all the little nitty-gritty kind of things that goes into forming a Green Team. The parents pay. It's for a whole year's program. They pay $84, and that's probably 40 meetings. And that's times four schools. So anyway, the Parks and Recreation sees it as a little bit of a moneymaker. And they really supply the secretary. They supply. I have access to just about any room that I would want to hold a Green Team meeting in. I have just access to so many different things through Parks and Recreation. But you have to establish a relationship with them, which, of course, I did with my third-grade student. And then you unpack it and see what benefits you have. 501c3, so we have those benefits. We have all liability insurance. Anyway, recommend, if somebody's interested in getting something rolling like that, to maybe check our website, call me. I'd be more than happy to. You know, if Scott wants to give my number later on, but I'd be more than happy to tell you what works and doesn't work in my situation. Positive attitude makes a big makes a big difference. Just assume you can. Okay. Go for it.
With assuming you can, have you had some moments that have been just kind of doing the work and asking permission later?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know. I think I'm going to. Yeah, I'm going to cut that conversation right there, Scott.
All right, no problem. I can cut that out,
yeah,
no problem.
Yeah, no, you don't have to cut it out, but I just wouldn't like to go into it right now because that might be not the healthiest thing for me to do.
We will admit that it's happened, but not tell the war stories that go with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just do it, that's all.
Fair enough.
Just do it.
So you say that having those resources by going through Parks and Rec, then that's a partnership that you have with them. That, like, the secretary is because that's their secretary who you're working with. It's their liability insurance that you're working with.
It's their copy machine I'm working with. You know, it's their relationship with our copy center at the school district that, you know, that can run off 400 copies of something for me instead of me having to run to Staples and pay 10 cents a sheet. Those kind of benefits, and that would be my recommendation.
And those are some of the organizational efficiencies that come in with this because they're pre-established and you just kind of partner with them to get the rest of this work done.
Yeah. They take part of the glory for it too. So they get, you know, they get their benefit as well. Okay. We won an award through the Parks and Recreation, whatever the affiliation is, either state or nationally, I don't know. But, you know, they won money because of the Green Team and so on.
I can see how that can really help then, and especially with everything that they have established.
Oh, yeah.
To, if you need to go after grants and other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing that you mentioned is that the Parks and Rec, is that a Parks and Recreation unit within the school district, or is that part of the Mechanicsburg municipality?
Every Parks and Recreation is different. Ours is through the school district. We all get our paychecks. And I get paid for 10 hours a week, which I put back in, but I work probably 50. But that part of that is, too, that I'm a workaholic. And like I said, this is my passion, and it's just like stand back, okay? So, yeah, I get paid for 10. I work 50, so it's a good deal for them. This Parks and Rec also has responsibility to all of the municipalities, Sharmistown, Mechanicsburg, Borough, Upper Allen Township, blah, blah. And so they have to go to their township meetings or their borough meetings and be attending there every month. So they are part of the school district, 50%, and the municipalities, 50%, I would say.
So however it is that they function, they play this role between both the school districts and the local governments.
Right. That's correct.
And then because of the different municipalities you mentioned, the Mechanicsburg Area School District, Pennsylvania is a little strange for the rest of, for the listeners in the United States, and I apologize, I don't know internationally. Pennsylvania has something like 2,500 municipalities, if I remember right, and I forget how many school districts.
500.
500 school districts within those like 2,500 or so municipalities.
Right.
Okay. I grew up in Maryland where each school district was countywide.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways that you can interact in Pennsylvania, both local government and schools, that are very different than what you might find elsewhere.
Yes.
But that also may help you because of how small these organizations are, relatively speaking, mm-hmm. with the populations that they have. But this is something I can cover a bit more with my thoughts in the show notes, so listen afterwards for that. And one thing that you have available to you as a resource is the Trails and Trees Environmental Center. Do I have that name right?
Yes, you do. Yeah, you're one of the few.
Can you speak a bit about what that center is and how does that operate? Is that part of the school district or is that part of Parks and Rec?
Yes, 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 yes. If you want to use it as a part of the general public, you'd call the Parks and Recreation number and rent. If you're a nonprofit, it's usually free. If you're a for-profit, then some weddings or birthday parties or whatever, then you're going to pay a little bit, just a little bit. But the school district uses it during the daytime. However, general public could come in and use it. If there were no students on the site or if they weren't interfering in any way with the classes that were going on. And we have a curriculum that the teachers use when they come out, the kids, and it's working very well at this point. We have a pre-Civil War farmhouse, 1852, that has a nature center on the first floor and a historical room. And then the second floor is storage. And we have a pavilion that is where most of the parties are held, and that's what gets rented out. But that's a tremendous facility for teaching because, you know, what's the sense in coming out to Trails and Trees Environmental Center and then going into a building? Now, you can do that back at your school. So they go to the Environmental Center Pavilion. There's a whiteboard and benches and the whole thing. Very comfortable. Always a breeze, even in the 102-degree summers. It's still a breeze up there. And we have a beautiful, beautiful building that was just finished and opened in April that has two enormous classrooms, could be three, big classrooms. And that's part of what we're setting up now. I'd say it's 95% finished. It also houses the Parks and Recreation Department on the one side of the building. Then we have a wind turbine that was donated, 40 solar panels, geothermal. We have a stream that's called Down Run. That's the furthest tributary of our Cedar Run, which is a tributary of our Yellow Breeches Creek. So there's a lot of learning that goes on in our little Down Run. It's a 26-acre site, and 12 acres is woodland that we try and keep as absolutely natural, doing the nature thing as possible with trails running through. It has 2.2 miles of trails, which are open to people exercising, people that are clean up after their dogs, bicycles, that kind of thing. There's a huge meadow out in front that is kind of a senseless thing because it's all grass, but it has a historical map on it with all of the historical trees from all over the United States, like a Don Redwood representing California at one end and the Adirondack white pine kind of thing at the New York. Boston would have the tree from the cemetery where I think John Adams, Samuel Adams are buried in Boston. So anyway, it's not a total waste.
But it sounds like you have quite a lot going on there as a center where people can go and learn quite a lot about, because that's where you have your example composting.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
And also the different gardens that you have installed there as well.
Yeah. Yes, we do. For educational purposes, we have our local horticulturist, George Weigel, make sure that he puts together very interesting educational gardens for us, and we put them in and then try and keep them weeded.
We've covered a little bit of everything that goes on here in the Mechanicsburg area here in central Pennsylvania, not far from my home. And you're certainly one of the great experts that we have around here for outreach and education with all the work that you're doing, both between the environmental club, your work as a teacher within the schools proper. As we bring things to a close, is there anything else that you would like to add to this conversation for the listeners?
Yes, I would like to encourage people to get on to the Mechanicsburg Area Adult Environmental Club. 2 years ago, started an organization that we call Green-Cause, Green-Cause, CAUSE.org. And it's an organization that has two parts. One part is this website that we are constantly putting together that lists all of the green entities, whether they're church, whether they're clubs, whether they're green businesses like dry cleaners. If you want a dry cleaner that's green, you get on there and they'll tell you where to take your things. So that's in a 20-mile radius of the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg. And then the other part of Green Cause is we are trying to start environmental clubs in each municipality in a 20-mile radius of the dome of the state capitol. So those are the two parts of Green Cause. But I really would love it if your listeners would check out our site and even like us.
I'll certainly include links to all of that information in the show notes for this episode so people can find it. As I said, I think that Paul and the work that he's doing here is replicable for where you are. If you're someone who can network well with others and design isn't necessarily your thing, if you're kind of new to this whole permaculture thing, but you'd like to get involved and get some things happening, you can go find out more information from Paul and his organizations. I will include his phone number in the notes, of course. I'm not going to publish that, just to keep that away from the spammers and everybody else who might find it. But Paul's contact information will be available so you can get in touch, learn more, and begin to implement this kind of work in your environment. So, Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me, welcoming me to your house. This is my first in-person interview, and I think it went well enough, all things considered. So thank you very much.
You're more than welcome, Scott. Thank you.
And that was Paul Garrett. Like my interview with Larry Korn, I don't have much to say from this. The introduction and what Paul shared fill out anything that I might add. If you'd like to contact Paul, since he was willing to put his information out there for you, his email address is paulgarrett40@comcast.net. And you can pull how to spell Garrett from the title for this episode, but it's G-A-R-R-E-T-T. So that would be paulgarrett40@comcast.net. Or if you'd like to, you could also call him 717-514-3546. Now, this isn't going to be included in the show notes because I don't want Paul to get spammed. So again, his phone number is 717-514-3546. And he's here in Pennsylvania, so is on Eastern Time. Please consider that should you decide to reach out to him. You can also contact him through his organization, Green Cause. Find that at green-cause.org or on Facebook by searching for green-cause. If you're left with thoughts or questions after listening to this show, feel free to reach me by email, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, or give me a call, 717-827-6266. You can also send me a message on the Facebook page for the show, facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast. Leave a note on the website or on Twitter, where I am, @permaculturecst. Up next week will be Nicole Foss, who joins me to talk about financial and energy crises. After that is Dr. Laura Jackson. She and I talk about agriculture and what we can do to build more regenerative systems. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other. And the legal. The Permaculture Podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives, Non-Commercial License. Feel free to share it, just tell people where you got it from, and don't change or sell it.